Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Nine Lives, Season 2, Episode 6. Thank you for joining us today. I am joined by the wonderful Finley Hampton, second time on the podcast. You will know him as the 100-plus marathoner, my colleague, my friend. People loved you when you came on last time. I think you definitely have a very gentle and wise approach to running and performance, which I think my audience definitely appreciate. I think in a world where running social media feels a little bit unapproachable and a bit intense at some times, it's nice to come across your page and see someone talking about, you know, reaching for better in their life through running. So thank you for coming on again.
Hopefully. Yeah. Am I the first repeat offender?
You are. Yeah, it's rare that I have guests. Although I do have a few more lined up. So don't worry, people. It's not just going to be me yammering on every single week. But I wanted to have you back on because you are my coach. You are my running coach. And I think that that could be a really interesting conversation for people to hear from a coach's coach perspective on how you've trained me or how you're training me for Paris.
Yeah, we're not there yet. There's
we're
no
not there. Not there yet. We've got 8 weeks.
Yeah, and then even after that, there's going to be more and more.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously this whole marathon block that I'm in now is kind of, I'm working towards getting fast or faster. And we have lots of questions from the lovely community. We're going to do a Q&A at the end of this podcast. But I wanted to maybe talk a little bit about what my plan is, why you program me this way, and what each run does or is doing to make me faster from a coach's perspective. Obviously, I've been on like a massive journey. We've all heard it before. From being very overweight to now long distance running. And I kind of got to a place where, you know, I was running 5Ks, 10Ks very comfortably, half marathons very comfortably. Marathons, are they ever comfortable? Don't think so. It can be. But I'd always told myself that I would never be fast because that's just the idea that I had in my head where I was like, you know, okay, I'm just always going to be a slow-ish runner or whatever. I'm just going to do my little trail runs. But in the back of my mind, I'd always wanted to try to be fast. And fast, of course, is relative. My fast will not be someone else's fast, which will not be the next person's fast. So because it's a question that I get an awful lot, how do you get faster? Do you want to talk us through a little bit about how you are programming me for Paris?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that it's quite useful to use like a real life example in you, Cassia, going for the Paris full marathon, which I'll be pacing you.
You will. Oh, yes. I forgot to say, Finn is coming with me to Paris and will be pacing me on this race,
so come, cheer, and when we run by, throw things at us.
Yeah, throw croissants. Soft things, please.
How to get fast? I mean, where do you start with that question? Because you have some people that head into running and they have this kind of natural leaning into being a little bit quicker. And I'm literally speaking about myself here, because I'm not a runner who's put in 15 years worth of graft to get where I am. I'm by no means the fastest, but I'm lucky. And some people, maybe like yourself, you maybe feel like you have to work that little bit harder to get quicker times.
A little bit.
And sometimes you can't fight your DNA, your heritage, the cards that you were dealt. So whatever answer I give to this, it's going to be so nuanced.
Yeah.
And the advice that one person gives at any given time, it might not be the advice for you. So that's the first thing to cover off.
Yeah.
But I think the useful thing with, you know, using you as an example is that a lot of people that follow you have very similar stories. So there we go. But when it comes to your programming, it's not too dissimilar to most people that I program. It's like you don't have the full week to commit to 7 sessions.
No.
Maybe 7 running sessions. That might be, you know, a double session on a certain day and then 3 gym sessions.
No.
You don't have that. And I think that anyone listening to this, there's probably like 0.01% that can do that.
Yeah. Those are the athletes
whose
job it is to run.
Yeah.
You know.
And if that's the case, then like, I mean, it's an amazing place to be. Yeah. So when we're working with, you know, everyday people that have everyday jobs and are time restricted, then we have to waver and train differently to an athlete.
Yeah.
Because an athlete can get away with multiple speed sessions each week and it isn't such a hoo-ha compared to, I think maybe I'm guilty of posting this, but a lot of the stuff on social media is run slow to get faster, run slow to get faster. It's difficult when you're not running so much, you don't have the ability to run so much that you can always run slow or always run fast. And how do we find this perfect balance? So the first thing about running faster is, yes, we need to make sure we have a relationship between the time that we spend running easy and the time that we spend running hard. And if a training program has a good balance between that, then you're already in a good place.
Right.
So if you take how much you're running each week, roughly on average, like 4 runs a week, is that fair to say?
3.
Yeah, 3 to 4?
3 to 4, yeah.
So I think yours is going 3, 4, 3, 4 maybe.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head. But that doesn't mean that because we're not professional athletes, we can't do fast sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Every single week, there absolutely can be one session dedicated towards running hard.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Sometimes on your longer runs, I can be mean and say, work towards race pace here or work towards sub-race pace on the long run.
Yeah.
But some weeks, it's just solely one speed session and then the rest should be relatively comfortable. Whether you stick to that or not, well, that's to be decided. But you want to couple the working hard with the working easy because they're working two different things. And we're running slowly. We're building our aerobic fitness, which is our foundations, which we can use as a springboard to then work on our tempo sessions, our threshold sessions, so we can sustain effort for longer.
Mm.
And of course, you know, when we're working at, you know, lactate, which, you know, is seen as threshold, how quickly can your body clear away the lactate that's produced? Of course, that's getting us faster, but we look to that and don't tend to look at the really slow mileage, which is actually the first thing that helps. So when it comes to your plan, you know, we're currently at 3 to 4 runs a week. You're roughly doing one hard, it should be hard session each week, whether that's tempo, whether that's intervals, whether it's got elements of threshold.
Mm.
And then every other week or so, if you look at that long run, there are sections programmed out where I push you a little bit harder. You don't need to do that. But to get faster, the first answer that comes to my mind is really, it's that relationship between how often are you running hard and how often are you running slow and easy.
Yeah. Because for me, what's been just delightful about this whole process is, first of all, having a coach, I think, is just game changing in my mind, because having someone else look from the outside and tell you what it is that you can be doing and have someone give you feedback is amazing. Because up until this point, I've kind of just been, I've been coaching myself and I've been kind of doing the guesswork of like, okay, I should try and push myself here. But having someone else tell you, by the way, you have a half marathon and 8 kilometers of those should be race pace, you know, you're kind of like, okay, well, I've got this run today. I've got to do this today. And it does help a lot. But the most wonderful thing for me has been the proof of, at the beginning of this, I didn't think I could get fast at all, ever. And now we're talking like 2 months later, I'm running like 4:50 paces comfortably for like 2 kilometers comfortably. But you know, those are paces that I, in my wildest dreams, never ever thought that I'd be able to ever hit for like even a half a kilometer, let alone 2. And that has been so cool. Like, I did quite a hard session last night on the treadmill. Because I do find it easier on the treadmill to go fast. I think because you don't have a choice. It's that or you die.
You're a you sicko. Fall off. Yeah. That's tough.
It's yeah, I don't know why. But I, yeah, and I was just holding a 450 pace for 2 kilometers, feeling just like fine. And that's so crazy. And I think I'd really got in my head about, because I was a smoker and because of my knees and my body and all that, that I just, for some reason, I just thought, well, it's just never going to be for me. And I'd always looked at faster runners and maybe, and I can say this in hindsight with a hint of jealousy, and being like, oh, I'm never going to do that, you know. But actually now being in a proper training block where you are getting faster and doing the work, and it's quite hard work. It is hard work. It's proper hard. And, you know, I think I've just got so much more respect for people who get those times, because Jesus, it is like, you've got to really, your output's quite, it's hard. And during the runs, you've got to dig to a place where, because holding pace is different to holding distance. Distance after a while becomes like, oh, this is really nice. You know, I'll bring a picnic with me and I'll run 30 kilometers through the woods. That's like so, so nice. But holding those kind of paces for like an 8K tempo is a very different experience.
Yeah.
And, for sure.
And I think you mentioned about you felt like you were winging it before. And,
yeah.
You know, let's be honest, the majority of us are.
Yeah. And that's great. It got me really far.
It can, surprisingly far. And I think what you're probably being opened up to now is what's possible when you come into each session very well intentioned, just like an athlete does. Okay, you can't give the hours to match what an athlete does, but when an athlete goes into each session, whether it's on the track, whether it's a long run outside, they're bringing their full focus into it, and they're delivering the session.
Yeah.
From my experience of coaching people, I've never ever coached a single person that I've not gotten well with. So I thought I could just talk about anything. But, you know, if people were to be honest with themselves, a lot of the time they can go off schedule. You know, that's when the role of the coach comes in, and maybe I've got to be a little bit firm. I've always said to you, like, do the session.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I think that that's the next step from winging it and just going out and, you know, doing that run in the woods with a picnic. That's amazing. I made a career out of that. but the next step to then start to, you know, run faster than you could ever imagine actually is in bringing your focus to this each session. So if it's a conversational run for 6K and you think that's like beneath you or it's not exciting enough, it's like, do the conversational 6K and love it.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to those hard sessions, you have a little bit more oomph to give because you're well rested.
Yeah.
Because hopefully the coach has programmed you something that's very useful.
Yeah. And then something that I hadn't done before, or at least I think, because my whole running journey has been intuitive up until this point. So that's probably what the word I was looking for was intuitive, as in when I fancied it, I've gone for a run and I've let my body decide the distance. And then last year I ran the London Marathon and was traumatized by that because I was so unprepared. Because the first marathon I ran was in the woods on my own, which is very different to the London Marathon. Different experience.
You did incredible. You ran that marathon faster than I ran like my first one.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, but I remember just being like, okay, if I want to do a marathon again, I want it to be proper, as in I want to give this the grace that it deserves. And, you know, actually having those runs programmed for you and then having like a deload week, for example, I just took deloads because it was like, I was like, oh, I'm tired, I'm going to skip my run. But what is the purpose of a deload when you're looking at it in a race prep?
Yeah, it can change on whoever you're working with. But essentially, it's a period of time. Let's take 7 days. It could be 7 days and you have it every 6 weeks, every 5 weeks. It could be every 8 weeks, but it depends on the individual. But essentially, it's a period where obviously you still run and you still do sessions. Potentially, you drop a session and then each of the other sessions are a little bit lighter in volume, maybe 30, 40% lighter than usual. And what the science behind it is, it allows your body to adapt to the changes it's made during the previous 6 week block of training. You know, that period where things can just settle down. And the idea is that instead of running and keep pushing on week on week on week, that's tiring, it's draining, it's not fun, and it can be exhausting. So if you put a deload week in there, you can let your body rest and heal.
Recover.
Yeah, adapt to the changes. Yeah. And again, I think I spoke about this on the last podcast, but people, this all sounds very physical, which is great, but in the moment of the deload week, you can just like do other things and maybe you have a bit more time to do something else. And having that nonchalant behavior is actually really important
as
well.
Like, I always said when I was going into my ultra marathon, because that distance really scared me, 15K. But the only thing that got me through it and got me through that whole like prepping for it, which I was totally winging, by the way, I was just out in France running randomly, but it worked. It was fine for that. But I just un-big-dealified it. This is what I always say. Like, you have to, sometimes you have to be like, it is a big deal, but it's also not. Like, I am here to have fun. This is meant to be a hobby that is fun, and I'm meant to be enjoying it.
Absolutely. I have clients, or I've had clients in the past, that it seems like there's so much riding on every session. And if you do it or you don't, it's the end of the world. And I would just say you do or you don't, full stop. There's nothing at the end of that. And you know, a training block, whether it's lasting for 8 weeks or whether it's 20 weeks long, you know, one singular run isn't going to make or break you. And having that kind of jovial, lighthearted nature is just paramount. And I'm fortunate because I sit here and I know what it's like to cover far distances and fast. So it's kind of easy for me to say, but genuinely just look at whoever your idols are and look how they are. Usually it's just kind of peaceful and lean into that a bit more.
Yeah, I definitely notice when I'm having like hard weeks at work or feeling a little stressed in other, you know, aspects of my life, I put a lot more pressure on myself to perform well in running because then I'm like, well, at least I've got that. Like, and if that then doesn't feel good, then I'm like a mess. So I think just, letting it be sort of like a calm practice where you are just a little bit more like chilled out with yourself. Yeah. Tends to get better results.
Definitely. And that's where all the excitement is. It's actually the lack of control and the ability to give up what you think you have control of. Like, you know, in science, we're looking more and more into what we're made up of, and we can zoom into cells at a magnification that's never been done before. And the more they go in, they're finding just space.
Yeah.
And what's that made up of? More space. And we're these beings surrounded by all this matter that's just space, which is made up of nothing, yet we're trying to say this run will define me, or if I can do this run it's gonna be great. And it doesn't make sense to me.
So to caveat off that point, which is a very interesting point, I spoke in a previous episode with Joe, my fiance, all about spiritualism and how running is a very spiritual practice for me. Are you a spiritual person, and do you find that running is a spiritual practice for you? Do you find that it's something that kind of that resonates with you in any way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I was like 15, 16, I was really big into, I believe they're called the Four Horsemen, and it's made up of people like Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah.
And I was just like a total atheist, and I didn't have an ounce of spirituality. I probably would have laughed anyone out of the room because I probably wasn't that nice. And I just, you know, I was young and probably not made up of great informed choices, but now I have absolutely like no, I don't even need to think.
Yeah,
for me, running is super spiritual. Yeah. And I kind of used to only ever see life as physical, hence why I was like, it's either no or yes. And for me, I was on that side of no, there is no spirituality, there is no God or higher power. And whilst I don't think that there is necessarily a higher power, I do think that, you know, we're all spiritual beings and we are having this spiritual experience, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
And running is, I mean, what a chance to, in this, you know, fast-paced world, to just get out there. And unless I'm out there slogging, making content, it's not quite the same. But if I'm just on my own in the woods, how often do you get that time to yourself?
Yeah.
Not a lot.
Not a lot anymore. But I think for me, running is all about self-discovery and expansion of self as well. Like just sort of realizing just how far you can push yourself and things that you learn about yourself along the way. And I think with the explosion of running becoming so popular since lockdown, I would say, I think a lot of people are realizing that it's very much about looking inward instead of the external and discovering that about themselves. And I think it's like record-breaking amounts of people are now entering half marathons and marathons. And I think we might have something to do with that. But I think it's just such a cool time and such an amazing way that maybe people don't even realize what they're doing is a spiritual practice. But through, you know, constant pressure on themselves to improve, they're kind of just, you know, changing their reality. And that is a spiritual practice in itself. And it's so wicked to see. And I think what is lovely is, and I've had a few clients come to me who just want to do like a bit of body recomp, some lifting. And then I always end up, I'm like, have you heard of a marathon? Have you heard of a half marathon? And they're like, no, don't. I don't want to get into this long distance running thing. Like, no. And I'm like, all right, fine. So I'm just like, well, okay, we'll try. We'll start with cardio, see if you want to maybe like do one run a week, like on the treadmill. And then they end up just being like, that was actually really nice. That made me feel really good. And then I always find when people start running outside, something changes. And then they start to realize that, oh, I can connect with nature while I'm doing this. I can connect with myself while I'm doing this. Like, I know that when I get to the end of the run, I'll have a sense of fulfillment that like feels absolutely incredible. And then when you start going through the distances and being like first 5, 10, 15, half full, it's just like, it's magical. It's magical. And I'm yet to find a metaphor in anything else that I think works so well as running for life.
Yeah. Just moving through space time a little bit quicker than you usually would. The, you know, if it was medicine and you could bottle it up, it would be the best thing for any patient. And I mean, in terms of getting outside and running by yourself, I think that we just don't turn inwards enough a lot of the time. Yeah. Like I always mention, we're in this physical world, in this physical world, and I do think we're slowly waking up to the fact that nothing outside of us, nothing out there can affect anything on the in. You know, when we're nothing on the outside, we can be anything on the inside. Mm. And you've got to shed all these layers. It's like an onion, peeling it back. And you kind of think that this is me. No, it's not. Shed that back. This is me. No, it's not. Shed that back. And eventually you have that kind of realization when you're deep into a run on your own. You're like, everything I thought was true has no truth behind it.
Literally. Yeah. I think it's like the great untangler for me, the great untangler of thoughts. Like I can be having a really fraught or anxious morning, anxious day, whatever. And I know, and it's so funny because every time I forget and I'll put my run off because I'm just like, oh, no, let me just deal with these emails first. Let me just do this. But I know that it should always come before, because as soon as I'm out there in that place, giving myself that space, they just seem to untangle naturally. They just fall and like fall away, the ones that don't matter, and then I'm able to problem solve. And it's just that forward motion. It's completely nuts that it's just moving slightly faster.
Yeah, I know. And I think I walked today from Paddington Station to like Charing Cross area. Maybe it was like a 2.5 mile walk. And on the way here, I was like, back in the day, if you rewind, you know, 6-7 years, I'm just getting a tube then. I just love it. It's not a run, but you're still moving through.
I walk everywhere now, like as many times as I can. I'll choose to walk. It's so meditative. I hope that everyone is able to give themselves the gift of that. And it doesn't have to be running, it can just be walking if we're talking about like movement therapy, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is definitely something that I've mentioned a bunch, whether it's in conversations or in conversations like this. And actually, I think the secret almost to life is however you feel out on the run. This took me a long time to discover and hopefully implement. And it's actually that every second of your day can be like the run. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of being meditative is, it doesn't need to like a meditation retreat in order to be in the moment. And actually you can have it no matter what's going on in your life, whether it's good or bad. You know, we're always going to have challenges. I'm never going to sit here and say that life's going to be easy, but you can have that feeling no matter what you're doing, because at the end of the day, if you break things down enough, all we're doing is a movement or an action to reach a goal. Yeah. You know, whether that is pulling this microphone close to my face, it's the same as going for a run. I'm just doing something to get something out of it. And that's something that I'm still working towards, but I think that's a real exciting adventure.
Definitely. Do you think with running, because so many people are like, how are you not bored of this yet? Like, you talk about this like pretty much every week, and you've got friends who do it, and like there's this whole thing. Do you think there's an aspect of drinking the Kool-Aid when it comes to like the running community?
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Because I was having this conversation with the podcast producer Rihanna, who is also running Paris, who you are also coaching. And she's just fully drank the Kool-Aid. You know, we're just like sending each other our splits. We're talking about running shoes. Like once you get into that, it's just like this, it's not a cult, but it's definitely, there's definitely aspects of it that I just think from the outside looking in, I should say, or when I was on the outside looking in at the running community, I was like, what's going on here? This is very strange. There's all these clubs and they're all talking about all these different things and da 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 da. But once you're in it and you realize just how magical it is, it becomes just second nature to become quite, I think, obsessed, but very in it. But I think what's the most important part is that running is and remains accessible for everyone, and that there isn't this kind of like, you know, cult vibe when it comes to the running community, especially in London. And I think that's why people really like your content and your conversations, because they just feel very non-threatening, like you say, like easy.
Yeah, I just hope that, you know, I'd like to say that I talk about things with no like hidden agenda. Yeah. You know, I don't want anything out of it,
yeah,
other than just to speak what I think is true. And that isn't always the case. I'm sure I talk a lot of rubbish, but yeah, I think especially with running, it feels very much like just these energies of excitement coming together. And I from my experience in 2019, I started a few running clubs, but I started this one that's in my mind, and one's called Monday Night Running. Very inventive name.
Cool.
And I did it when I was living in Oxford, and it was basically for like university students to come down to. I didn't have any kind of like legal systems in place, so if someone fell, I would have been screwed. It wasn't official. It was just like me and then this Monday Night Running, and people came, and sometimes it was two people and sometimes it was like 25. And I remember at the time thinking, this is just so weird because this isn't that sexy. It's dark. Yeah. It was like the autumn, winter time. Yeah, these people are turning out. Like uni students get a bad rep. But when we're here, like we're so engaged with one another. And that was like a moment along the way of my path where I thought, there's just something in this here. And I feel like as the months and years have gone by, everything you just mentioned about, you know, you and Rihanna drinking the Kool-Aid, it's just like that is just snowballing.
Yeah.
And now we have this like just massive movement.
Yeah.
And it doesn't surprise me, because what is it at the core? It's just people excited to be with each other doing something fun.
And be alive, I think, you know. I think fitness, especially online fitness, became very insular and separate and a little bit competitive. Not that running isn't, but running doesn't feel competitive to me. I don't know why. But I think with running, it's given people the chance to sort of be outside and do something just to do it, just to discover something instead of trying to change themselves or anything like that. It's a really, really beautiful thing to witness. And I think if we break it down to kind of like two aspects of it, obviously there's the physical, which is the like practical running advice and what the program is that I'm on now for Paris and all of that good stuff. But a huge part of it is mindset and a success mindset and cultivating a success mindset. There's a lot of questions that I usually get around self-sabotage, embarrassment, self-belief, kind of getting out of your own way when it comes to believing that you can do these things. Have you ever struggled with embarrassment or self-sabotage or anything like that? Because obviously sometimes we just look at Finn and you're just so happy just running along the street at all times. But are these things that have ever crossed your mind, or have you always been quite, you know, in the flow?
No, I've definitely suffered from embarrassment. I feel like in 2023, I got pooed on by a bird 3 times over separate occasions.
Oh, I thought it wasn't, you were gonna say in one run.
It wasn't the same bird just coming back. But you know, I got pooed on 3 times in a year. Which, has that ever happened to anyone else?
No.
It's embarrassing because it was like both times, like all over me.
Oh God.
Before I kind of started this whole running adventure, yeah, I was prone to all of that, and I still am. You know, I think that because I have this, whether it's my girlfriend or my friends, they definitely look to me as if I'm this, you know, enlightened yogi. I'm absolutely not. You know, if I was to give a visual of it, it's that I have a basement just like everyone else, and if you were to shine a light in it, you see some rubbish in the corner and you clear it out, but you go back with a more bright light, and there's more, and you miss some. And actually, there's always going to be some rubbish you got to clear out. And I still feel like that's how I live life. And the rubbish takes shape in many different forms, you know, whether it is self-sabotage, whether it is embarrassment. And I have all of that. But I think that if there's one thing that I'm super grateful for, is that I think my ability to respond to it, it isn't different to anyone else's. But I just trust it a lot more. And I know that whatever situation I've been presented with, there's never been a time that I wasn't able to respond to it. Whether it came out in an embarrassing way, you know, I can't help that. And I'm just okay with that. And I think a lot of the time it's people's relationship with their ability to respond, and not knowing it and not trusting it is where a lot of the issues are caused. And running for sure has helped me mellow and hopefully become a little bit more wise. But the day when it comes that I can say that I'm rid of all embarrassment, I mean, it'll be an interesting day, but I don't see it coming anytime soon.
No, I mean, like I said in a previous episode, just talking about how to be cringe is to be free, to be cringe is to live. Like, I'm one of the cringiest people you'll ever meet. I'm so in touch with my feelings, and I think it's the best thing ever. I'm constantly embarrassing people, myself, and I love it.
But this is such a unusual situation to be in, because obviously you have a podcast now and you wouldn't have had one, you know, let alone 2 years ago, 5 years ago, you know, and to put yourself out there is a really tough thing to do. So I was actually speaking to someone the other day about this, and how I went really, really out of my way to try and make myself less cringe, especially with running. You talk about these moments of like self-sabotage and embarrassment. I remember I used to just drink so much beer, marathon to marathon. So I'd go run a marathon and then drink loads of beer with the boys, and then go run a marathon the next day, drink loads of beer, because that was my way of being like, I haven't changed. I'm not cringe. I know you see this guy that runs marathons every day and posts about it and talks online to like 2 followers, and it might seem cringy, but hey, I'm drinking beer. And I went so far into trying to cover that up. I would never do that now.
Yeah.
So even when I talk about all these stories, and it might still come across like I'm really calm now, that was not how it was in the moment.
That's so fascinating that you felt the need to like still, don't know if it's people pleasing, but
yeah, massive.
Because it does feel quite cringy in a way sometimes, because putting yourself out there is the most terrifying thing in the world for any human being, because what we fear most is rejection and ridicule. And if you're doing something and putting yourself out there, you will face rejection and ridicule every day. I think social media is such a good, you know, way of seeing that. Like, it's just every day, you just get used to it. But you cannot make change in yourself, others, or the world without putting yourself out there. So embrace the cringe, embrace the embarrassment, do it with a red face, do it with tears streaming down your face, but just bloody do it, get out there. And the people pleasing stuff, if it is people pleasing, whatever it is. I weirdly, when I started running and properly long distance running, was still going to the pub a lot with my friends, because I still wanted to be like, no, wait, guys, I'm still cool. No, I know this running thing is so weird. What a weird, such a weird hobby. But inside I'm like, I really love this. It's the only thing making me feel like a human. It makes me feel like I can do anything. Oh, but it's fine, I'll come to the pub. Like, yeah, definitely. Let's split a bottle of wine. Like, you know, not, of course you can drink and you can run. You do both. Most of my friends and family do both, whatever. But it's just really interesting. You felt the need to kind of extinguish that light in front of people.
Yeah. And this is the same guy that a couple of years prior to that, I lived with the quote, "You're playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you." I had that on my bedroom wall.
Wow.
But I wasn't living it. And that's the thing where I'm so aware whenever, you know, I jump in a conversation like this, it doesn't have to be filmed and mic'd up, but just in normal conversations of life, that I am not the finished article at all. And a lot of what I say comes from this viewpoint of, oh, I've got it easy and I know all the answers, and I don't. But I think I've probably made a lot of mistakes, and that's the thing that I want to share, because I do genuinely feel in a really good place now, and it's not come from thin air, basically.
Yeah, mistakes are my, I mean, they're the best thing ever, I think, because that's how we learn and grow, you know. If you don't make mistakes, you won't learn. And I think people are so terrified of making mistakes or being bad at things that they never start. And I've started so many things over the last year that I've been awful at, really bad, and I'm still really bad at them, but I'm still doing them because I think they're fun. Like podcasting, for example, my first episode, I listened to it the other day. I was like, ooh, I've come a long way since then. I wasn't very good. But now I think I'm decent. And then maybe in the future I'll be excellent. But it just goes to show you've just got to keep trying, even if it scares you. Just with running, with anything.
That's really cool. Imagine if you're constantly looking over your shoulder at the mistakes you're going to make and then trying to work towards a goal. I mean, like, as a coach, that is like 101 disaster waiting to happen. You know, you want to be able to live life and just... It's not even a case of looking forward. It's just engaging deeply in what you're doing now. And I think when you do that, you just don't live a consequence. Mm. So you're able to go do the podcast, maybe be pretty shoddy. I don't think you were, by the way, but yeah. And there is no, yes, it was great. No, it was awful. It was what it was.
Yes, exactly. Let it be. Yeah. I think people are searching for these great highs and lows, you know, and it's either fantastic or it's either a disaster. Sometimes existing in the kind of mundane is like really lovely because that's just where life is. Just like kind of it's okay sometimes, you know.
You're in it. Yeah.
But then, okay, so if you could give people advice on how to overcome embarrassment, let's say it's someone who... Because this is a real thing, is people are embarrassed to start running outside. I was mortified to try running the first time because how do you run? You know, it's like you just like go out, you open the front door and you're like, and I'll just move a little bit faster now, you know? And I was really embarrassed, especially to be seen in public, which is that's a whole other issue I've worked through in therapy. But what advice would you give to someone who is wanting to do the unbelievable, start their running journey, but they just feel too embarrassed to try?
Yeah, I hear them first and foremost, because this is like a question that I've had loads from, you know, 2018 onwards, and it shows no signs of stopping. So first and foremost, anyone that does feel like that, I mean, you should feel totally heard, and my God, you're not alone, because for every time you are sat, there are a lot of other people in the same situation too, which hopefully by default just gives you some sense of
belonging.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you're not this interesting odd one out. You're very much part of this human experience, and things don't come easy to some people and other things do. And I think that if you want practical advice, it's, you can try and get all the good gear to perhaps make you feel better about it, but that still isn't solving the problem. It's that relationship, you know, going on, and that internal experience. And I've already mentioned it, but there's nothing outside that's going to help you. And actually, if you know that and you start to think about that, that can be the thing that kickstarts you onto the journey. Because there isn't a world where there isn't a cat caller, for example. You know, there's always going to be pieces of shit in the world. And
every day.
And there's also never going to be the perfect line to run on. Where there's no people around. So what do you do with that? Start to turn inwards. And I think that you can always have people saying, just get outside. And I know it's not as simple as that. But if you choose to run around places that you really like and you really enjoy being around, that's a start. You're not alone is probably the best thing.
Yeah, I think everyone's embarrassed. You know, most people I know who start were mortified, or people I've worked with were mortified to start and now enter races. I mean, geez, the thought of being seen in public running, let alone now entering world major marathons and having people and inviting people and being like, come watch me do this thing, is crazy. But I would say as well, there's a little bit of fake it till you make it. Or someone said that wasn't a good thing to say, because faking it isn't what you're doing. You're like embodying it until you become it is a better way of saying it, you know? So for me, I just had to quite literally tell myself that I was an Olympic runner when I really wasn't. But I just used to kind of cosplay as one. And I'd be like, today we're an Olympic runner and we're going to go and do a really fast 5K. Took me an hour. And I think there's something to be said for that, but also knowing that everyone is in their own little human experience, bumbling along wherever you run. I used to run on the Thames path. I used to just imagine everyone was in their own little worlds with their own little problems, trying to do their own little thing, And the last thing they cared about was a young woman running on the Thames path. They're not going to perceive that. They're just going to be in their own world. And I think also seeing the world through the lens of, like, if you can believe the best in people, I would look at new runners now and always look at new runners with, like, go on, dude. It's the best feeling to see people out there trying. And I would hope that most of the human population are nice enough to also think that too. And be supportive. So maybe going into it with a bit of positivity, blind positivity.
Yeah, I love this idea that we're just all trying our best.
Yeah.
What I mean, I'm not saying that there is a best. Personally, I don't think there is this best version of yourself. And that's what makes life so exciting. But I just love it. You know, whether it's someone that's not treated you nicely or whatever your situation that you find yourself in, is that whatever we're doing, we are just trying our best. And and you can't go back, unfortunately, in the past and go change things. You're just living now, and that's why you might look back at some, you know, some things you've done in your life and go, oh, I would have done that differently. It's like, yeah, great, but you can't.
Yeah.
You were doing the best of what you had, and if you went back and did it again, you'd do the same thing. So every moment that we're living in, I love that idea that we're just doing our best. And who's to say that, you know, your journey is going to remain the same? You look at yours, you would still be stuck on the Thames path. I mean, I love the Thames path, but, you know, still maybe bashing out the 1 hour 5Ks, but you are open. You're open to see what happened, to see what would happen. And look where that took you.
And we only grow in discomfort. That's the only way. So being uncomfortable, being embarrassed and doing it anyway is so brave. But you will reap the rewards of that afterwards, you know. You will see what you're made of, really, truly. And then with that self-belief, you can start building upon that. And who knows, you could be running Paris Marathon. I'm trying to sub 4 hour Paris Marathon, which is what we're aiming towards. My last marathon was 4 hours 12, I believe.
It won't be trying for sub four. It will be well under sub four.
Do you think so? I'm terrified.
I'm your coach. I know it will.
How am I doing? Give me a little, you know, performance.
Well, I think you'll come well under sub four. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Because I am scared. I'm not going to lie. Because the last time I did like a proper race was London. And I just really did not like that experience. But I think that's because I was pushed to the front. Funny story, but I started the London Marathon, my first ever official race, at the front of the men's elite wave. Thanks to a lovely colleague of ours who, anyway, that's another story. But I think in Paris, I'll be in my correct wave.
Yes.
I'll be properly fueled, rested, full of croissants and ready to go. I've got my playlist. That's really what is the most important part. And then you'll be running next to me.
I mean, to bring it back to the start as well. Yeah, you have a pacer in me, but you said about your training program. Actually, a lot of your sessions and a lot of the percentage of the mileage that you run, a lot of it's well under race pace. So this is something that you can do as a run coach to certain clients. It depends, you know, sometimes people don't respond well to that, but a lot of the miles that you do actually are quite heavily under race pace. That should give you even more confidence because you're working with a buffer. And that's something that I do for people. It's so variable based on the person you're working with, but You when you wanted to be coached by me, you said that you wanted Nick Bear sessions.
If you don't know Nick Bear, he's a fitness influencer. He's one of the OGs, and I discovered him. He ran the California Marathon or something. Anyway, his team made this beautiful video of him running this marathon. I loved those bouncing pecs, and I just wanted some of those like really hard runs. And he's incredibly, you know, he's well-spoken, he's quite poetic about running. He's just a very, you know, I don't know anything about him, but he's...
Ex-military dude, yeah.
You know.
If you look at his sessions...
They are nuts.
Yeah, well, don't get me wrong, though. He couples it with, you know, he still has his very conversational sessions.
Right.
And he does run very high mileage.
Yeah, he does.
Each week. However, a lot of his, whether it's, you know, his faster stuff, it is still tempo, but he does a lot of threshold, which comes a little bit faster than tempo. So you've been working to that to some degree.
Cool. Because he went from a 4 hour 20 marathon to he just ran 2 hours 38, if I'm not wrong, or 2 hours 40 something.
I want to say 2:40 something.
Which for a ridiculous man of his, you know, he's so this guy's a big, he's heavier.
He's a tank.
he's a tank, he's jacked, which was very, very inspiring for me because, you know, I'm someone who holds weight in loose skin and stuff. And I was like, if that man can propel himself through a marathon in sub-3 hours, I think I could do sub-4.
He's also the perfect example of, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's worked to get to where he's got to, but he trains like an athlete.
Oh, his consistency is incredible. So that's something I find.
Could you mirror that? No, you mirror it. If instead of miles, you do it in Ks. That's probably a fair reflection.
Yeah. I think this is something that I have learned about myself is that I burn out really easily. And I think this is something to do with just living with a mood disorder and struggling with mental health stuff. And I don't actually see this discussed very much. Like high mileage for me, even though I have this romantic idea that I could be Nick Bear and that I want to do these crazy 20 milers every single day, or, you know, I'm obviously not 20 miles every day, but, you know, I noticed that when I'm really, my output is that high, I start to exhaust myself and I start to feel bad mentally. And then I start to burn out at work. And it seems to be this cycle where my true, I think, optimal feeling happy when I'm not preparing for a race is 3-7 miles a week. That for me just feels so nice. And that's all I need, genuinely. And I think I'm just learning that not everyone can have that kind of output. And I will openly admit that I can't have that kind of output. And it's not a nutrition thing. It's not a sleep thing. You know, I'm really good in all those aspects. I just think maybe some people just can't. And that doesn't mean I can't get fast. It doesn't mean I'm not a runner. It just means that I have other parts of my life, especially my mental health, that really need to be nurtured. And finding the balance for me has been admitting that I can't do that kind of high mileage, you know?
Yeah, but it's like you take a snapshot into anyone's life and be like, oh my God, they've got it all.
Yeah.
And what you're getting is one glimpse of a very different reality. And we've got to be careful with what we lean into and what we learn from, because just because Nick Bear does something one way, it's like, you're not Nick Bear. I spoke about this the other day, but you know, it's that classic Hollywood movies. The film ends, it's a lovely, lovely end, and then the credits roll, but you don't see what happens when they wake up the next day.
Yeah.
But we're in this life as living this human experience where, and until we don't, we are constantly living that next day. And yeah, be careful what you lead into, because you can only work with what you've got.
Yeah.
And by the way, 21 miles a week, you can do some really good work with that.
I think so too. I do. I think that it's a fine balance between pushing yourself just enough, but not pushing yourself too much that you burn out. And this was another sort of topic that I wanted to speak with you about. And it seems to be quite a general question I get a lot. But it would be avoiding injury and burnout and sort of all of that area. Because this is something that I've done. And I've never been injured running. And I think this is because probably a bit of luck, a lot of strength training, really like eating properly and not doing crazy output, I would say, throughout consistently. I've never, even in my ultra blocks, I think the longest run I did was like 10 or 12 miles or something, like leading up to that. And that seems to suit me just fine. And I noticed that the more mileage I have, the more I start to feel a bit creaky, the more I get cranky, the less I perform at work, the more I don't want to run, then I don't want to race.
Yeah.
So it's finding that kind of balance while not comparing yourself to other runners too, right? Because if I looked at, like, I don't know, anyone who I follow who is like a runner online and I saw their output for a marathon, mine would be half. But that's fine because I'm not burning out and I'm not getting injured. So finding that balance, that's the tricky part, right?
If you're following a plan where every week there's a super high volume long run, it might not be the plan for you. And I still get clients now. It's like they don't trust me.
Yeah.
Even after all these months or years, it's, Ivan, just checking that.
This is
correct.
Did
you mean to put 12K in for this long run? You know, I'm 7 weeks out from marathon. I'm like, yeah, I did mean that. Because I've also given you a bunch of runs in the week. And if you add that total up, that's a big volume this week. And we put so much emphasis on the long run and we never, ever big up the little guys.
Yeah.
The recovery runs, the tempo sessions or the hill repeats or the conversational pace runs, people almost like just, they think that they're tick boxes, but the long run holds all the value. Mm. It's not how it works. Every single session, like I mentioned at the start, you bring your attention to it and your full focus, you will have better gains over a longer period of time than if we're like, okay, can I do more each week? Can I do more of that long run? Do 20K, 22K, 24K. In terms of like injury and how to stay injury free, again, this is something that I don't think I have the answer to, and that's a controversial answer, but because everyone is so different and I only know my experience, and yes, I like to think that I can program and I can coach well, but ultimately it's you that leads you to where you go. And I never really want to interfere with that. I think actually good coaches do the best to interfere the least, and coaches that try and get too hands on, it's not the way that I go about it. So when it comes to injury, it's usually either the universe or something giving you a message.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Right.
And can we tune into this? And this is why I always think that going inwards is the best thing. And it's like, if I could, as a coach, be saying, okay, so you've got this lateral knee pain. Looks like it could be runner's knee. Go inwards. It'd be great. I would love to do that. Obviously, I don't do that. Yeah. But there's usually something that's not quite right in your life. And a lot of the time, it isn't just the running. Because if we're going to be honest, the running makes up 0.5% or 1% of your day. If you're running an hour a day, so it's definitely more towards half a percent of the day. So is it going to be the running? Or is it going to be the fact that you're not happy at work? Or that your partner was rude to you and you didn't disclose that and now it's awkward? Or is it that you're not sleeping well, you're not fueling properly? I would look towards those before blaming it on the running. There are practical steps that we can do. I can list off loads of, you know, single leg exercises, and I'm not going to do that. But of course we can strengthen. Of course we can build sustainable but productive training blocks. All this stuff. I would be looking, especially as I spent time working in pain management, with people with chronic lateral knee pain, with shin splints, with Achilles tendinopathy, I would be looking at your life as a whole. And I know that maybe isn't what people want to hear, but it's from my experience is the only way that's true. And when I've dealt with pain, as quick as it's come on, as quick as it's gone, when I've kind of addressed a few areas of my life, and it's unbelievable. My girlfriend, Sophie, when she gets stressed, she gets like pain in her lat and she goes, oh, I've injured my lat. And I'm like, you haven't injured your lat.
You're stressed.
You know this. It's your little marker. And next day, how is it? Oh, it's fine. And I think that's mind-blowing. And if we could tune into that a little bit more.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Because the main question from our lovely audience has been preventing injuries, knee pain from running so much. I deal with that a lot. It's the same question again. But and I think actually even the last episode we spoke about knees.
Yeah, we did.
So like for context of my knees, I have, what are they called? Bandy knees or... bowed knees. Mm-hmm. From being obese, the weight on my knees for so long bent my legs so that they're now
valgus. Is it valgus?
I think so.
Valgus or varus?
Something one like that. Two. But my shins basically go like this. Mm-hmm. Because obviously you shouldn't, or I mean, carrying that amount of weight on my knees for so long.
Internal rotation of the hips.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Which should make my knees weaker and does mean that I probably wouldn't be as good with running, right? And I've never experienced knee pain, which is very strange. And I think having weak knees or whatever that is, I think you had a really interesting point last episode about running actually not being bad for your knees. That is kind of a myth. I think in lower mileage as well, especially it can strengthen the knees and the ligaments and everything. Yeah. So practical advice, strength train, obviously fuel properly and rest. And it's so boring, but that kind of is what it is. And stress management, like you say, like, I mean, I have like a very small hip flexor thing that sometimes flares up when I'm stressed. Go figure.
If people were really honest with themselves, I'm sure we've all experienced that. And it's this resistance to go inwards and not try and go to the coach necessary for an answer. I mean, that sounds mental. I'm a coach saying that, but it's my experience, especially with a lot of the running challenges that I've done, whether it was running marathons back to back for 3 weeks or running 110 miles, there's always going to be that challenge, but no one has ever given me the answer. Still, you know, I've had really great mentors and coaches along the way. I've learned so much, but no one's given me the answer to anything. And that isn't a bad thing. And I actually think that's really important, especially, I mean, this is completely off topic, but setting parameters and boundaries with your coach as well is huge. It's actually, I think it's admirable when a coach says, I actually can't help with that.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the huge things about coaching is knowing when I can't help you with that, or you need to see a therapist, you need a life coach, you need, you know, whatever it is, just outsource as much as you can, or an injury specialist, you know.
For sure. Because there are so many exercises. Mm. There's so many exercises you can do. You literally just said the most important things, the rest, the strengthening, eating well, and then on top of that, having a program that really allows you to flourish and build,
and enjoy your life,
and grow mileage accordingly to the level that you're at, which hopefully most of the time is very chilled, and it only rises by X amount, maybe 10% max each week. But these are just words.
Yeah, I know. That's the difficult thing. I always find that like the frustrating part of giving advice is that there's only so much that you can tell people before they have to look inside and know themselves and learn themselves, because there's such a fine balance between rest, recovery, but also pushing yourself to do a session you don't want to do. But when do you know that that's going to burn you out? But when do you know? Let the noise kind of dull down for yourself. Take a moment to be still with yourself and really try and build that relationship of trust, and be, you know, go inwards, like you say, and try and ask yourself, you know, what is it that I need? Am I doing too much? Is the thought of skipping a run scaring me? Is that a negative thought? It shouldn't scare you. You know, if you have to skip a run, it should just be like, I've skipped a run.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
let's go to bed, you know. So looking at all of those things and thinking, is this like am I having a healthy relationship with myself and running? And you know, is that why I'm getting injured?
Just quickly, a story I've got, an eye-opening moment I had was, one of my challenges was 18 marathons in 18 days. Ooh.
Wow.
I got to my 19th one. I don't know if many people know this. I ran my 19th marathon, excuse me. And I really didn't want to do it. So I got halfway through and I had this massive realization, what am I doing this for? Like, I didn't feel like I was gaining anything new. There wasn't any, you know, expansive living to be found. Like, I was just doing what I did the day before. I could almost pick up the day before and put it on. And I was like, this isn't my message. Oh, like, I'm not feeling great. I ended up getting like really severe knee pain, so much so that even me, like, I've kind of gritted my teeth and gone through a lot of stuff. I pulled out on that 19th marathon, 20 miles in. I literally could have walked to the end, but it was really, really sore. And I was walking around Leicester Square like, I'm calling the challenge. It wasn't meant to be done at 18 marathons, 18 days. And I just thought, that's so funny, because I was as like emotionally volatile as I'd ever been in that moment. I was really done. And I was just like, I wasn't living my truth at that point, because I'd already realized, this isn't doing it for me. I've done. And then suddenly the knee pain comes on. I never had any of it. And I was like, this is wild.
Yeah.
And then the next day I've announced I'm not doing the challenge anymore. I'm like, the knee pain's fine. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is crazy how much stress, I think, correlates to those sort of things. But I think as well, if we're looking at beginner runners and myself at in the beginning stages, and how I think I've had the longevity to keep going without having, because people always say, like, you know, oh, just you wait until you have a life-changing injury, those 10Ks, they're going to come and get you. But I think I just haven't burnt myself out ever. And I think that's really It's always felt really friendly, running. It's always felt like running is a space that I go to for myself, for meditation, for wellness. It's not like a forcing thing. It's never been like a punishment or a cruel thing that I'm doing to myself. And I think there is some people that do have that kind of relationship with running.
Yeah.
And that can cause a lot of issues and injury and burnout. Yeah.
And if we are a beginner runner and we're running a lot of our runs above 5 RPE, rate of perceived exertion, you shouldn't really be doing it.
Mm.
Really take the effort out of it. When we run faster, we are at more risk of getting injured. That's the truth.
Yeah.
And that's why running slow is wonderful, because running slow isn't just great because you build aerobic fitness. It enables you to get more runs in because you have less risk of being injured. And anyone that's new to running, I wouldn't concern myself, at least for the first 6 weeks, with any real pace work. Just
no.
Like you mentioned, comfy, homey,
yeah.
Running.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of nutrition, this was highly requested on the Q&A, is basically just, what do you eat before a run?
What do you eat, mate?
Yeah, day before, night before, morning of a big run. This, again, I'm going to say, obviously, Finn and I aren't nutritionists. We're just little runners. And again, this is so particular to different people. Different people respond differently to different... We're just having a conversation outside about, you know, intra-running nutrition, and you love salt and vinegar crisps on a run.
Yeah.
I like dates or Haribo, but we've got to stop with the sweets. Got to have some proper food.
You can have some sweets.
Okay, but there's got to be some actual dense food. So... My thing is, I like, if I know I've got a big run the next day, I personally like to have a big old meal the night before, because I don't like running feeling super heavy. So I'll have like a big meal, something carby, and then, you know, bagel with some sugary jam and peanut butter before, keep it super simple. And then I'll have Haribo on the run, but I will get better at having real food on a run.
That's almost perfect. If you just add a few more snacks to the run, then you've nailed it.
But I think, if we break it down to, because you kind of, when we had our little intake call about Paris, you were saying carbs before the run, and then
always carbs. So essentially, obviously it differs for every single person. During the run, if you can get around 40 grams up to 60 grams of carbs per hour, then great.
That we're talking long runs here.
Yeah. Anything above an hour.
Yeah.
You can still practice snacking on shorter runs. So it doesn't mean that you never take on food for a shorter run. I actually really encourage a lot of people to practice on, even if you're just doing 7K at conversational pace, or even if you're doing just 30 minutes at conversational pace, you don't actually have to physically eat the food. Maybe just take a little nibble, but like just get into the habit of, what does it feel like to carry the food with me, to have it, whether it is a gel, whether it is dates like you mentioned, or whether it is an energy bar, whatever you choose to eat. Get into the practice of having that relationship with not just food, but also water. The water being the most important component of any fueling strategy. Without being hydrated, you are not going to digest the food that well. That's how you get stomach problems. But in terms of the structure, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you go all the way back to, if we're doing a race day and we're tapering, it's within that taper that you really want to, which is, by the way, taper is around 12 to 14 days before race day, where we drop the mileage. Again, kind of similar to a deload week. You can drop it by like 30%, 40%, and you still keep the intensity. So you don't fear away from any interval sessions or tempo sessions. You still, you know, you attack the sessions, but the volume's dropped. In that period, maybe it's 10 to 12 days out, I think most studies say it's like 10 to 12 days where you can look to up your carbohydrates just a little bit, whether it's by like 10%.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be this whole carb load. You know, you see these like fucking crazy plates of pasta with like croissants on top of it.
Yeah.
And like,
No.
If anything, that's probably going to just make you feel a bit heavy. So I think it's just, knowing that it is meant to be like 10%,
not
100.
If you just got a classic dinner of sausages and mashed potato and veg, that mashed potato component, literally just eke out a tiny bit of my mashed potato over a 10, 12 day period. That's a real effective way of carb loading, not just the night before scranning loads of pasta.
Gale's pastries for the rest of West London.
For sure. And that's a nice way of doing a carb load. But like you mentioned before, the night before, like just eat, if you actually, I don't know why he's in my head, but there's a guy called James Suarez I follow on Instagram. He's a friend of mine, and I'm always interested about with what he eats before a marathon. He's a quick marathon runner, and he's just always out at like a restaurant, like eating crap the night before. Because at that point, the work should be done.
Yeah, yeah.
And just eating foods that you enjoy is really important. And in the morning of, again, you still want your long-acting carbohydrates in whatever form that comes in. If it's the morning, the chances are it could be something like a bagel with avocado or something sweet, peanut butter and bananas. And you might have a snack before, which is a little bit sweeter. Again, that's why you got your dates, mm-hmm. and that's why you have sweets if you go for that, or your energy chews, all that kind of stuff. But don't hide away from the carbohydrates.
Yeah. Wicked. All right, last question. And I know that you're going to love this one because it's our favorite topic. What are your favorite tried and true running shoes? Obviously, you know, we get asked this a lot because we are runners and we run in shoes. But the blanket answer would be get your date tested. You get
your date. Your dates. Got dates on them, right?
Get your gait tested. Everyone needs different shoes. Everyone has different feet. Everyone is training for different things on different terrain. So we all need completely different shoes. My favorites are Sacconis. I love Sacconi. I've recently found them through Nick Bear, actually. And they're working really well for me. And they don't have a carbon plate because I was running in carbon plates every single day, which, why is that bad? Just because it's...
Because a carbon plate is essentially... It's a sole of a shoe which helps you run faster. It springs you forward. It's a very responsive shoe, and you're not, apart from your fast sessions and your races, you probably want to be staying out of those because it's just firing you up when you just want to be chilled.
Yeah.
Probably overworking muscles for a longer period of time if you're using them for every session. So you take the carbon plate out and you just run on maybe more standard running shoes like you're doing. It's a little bit easier for the body.
And it'll give you that boost on race day, right?
Yeah.
Because you'll be like, whoa, here we go.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If I gave a favorite, I would say New Balance. It's actually funny because I'm wearing New Balance.
Rapping.
New Balance fresh foams for me.
They're good.
They were the heartbeats of so many of my running challenges.
They are
and
good.
I loved them so much. Mm. Yeah.
I think, yeah, those are good. I tried the London Marathon ones actually. New Balance are great. Nike, you know, they do those big spaceship shoes, which they're good fun, I think, for race day, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
But for an everydayer, I think can't beat the Adidas and Saucony, in my opinion.
I would say, though, when it comes to getting tested for your gait, just be careful, because sometimes you can go into a store it's just like a shop and they say they test your gait, but it's just all, there's no like professional there. So be careful with who you choose, and know that if you go into a store and there isn't a professional person that works with gait analysis, that it's probably just a marketing ploy to upsell. So, and you can't beat feel, for example, which is why I beat around the bush with this answer with what's the best shoe, because there's a German word that apparently is Spielzeug, which basically means that kind of thing that you feel that you can't explain. So something that feels nice, it's pleasure, but you can't really explain why it is. And apparently I did hear that isn't actually true, but we're going with it.
So let's roll with it.
Yeah, we'll roll with it. And that's the best thing to find with the shoe.
Yeah, just something that feels everything. Good. I think what I like about a shoe is when it feels like I'm not wearing shoes.
Light?
Yeah, but because I've got very dense ankles. I get them from my dad. We've got like dense calves and ankles, so very strong. So I've got friends who I run with who are a wee bit taller than me and whose ankles just look quite fragile. Sometimes they're running and I'm like, oh yeah, you need a lot of ankle support. Whereas I think I'm quite sturdy, so I do prefer a shoe that feels a little less supportive. But some people would love a shoe that feels very supportive. So that's our spiel on shoes. And with that, that's all the questions. We've been yammering away for over an hour. So I'll...
Phone by.
Yeah.
An hour.
Yeah. But I know. Crazy, right? Thank you so much for coming on and doing this again. I think I didn't ask you at the beginning, but how are you?
I'm just so gutted you didn't ask me how I was. I'm fuming. I've spent the last hour...
being...
not happy. No, I'm really, really good. Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to do this podcast.
Yeah.
I'm just very fortunate, feel very grateful to be alive, and that is the default response, and hopefully we can all have that at some point because it's a great feeling.
It is. I feel the same. I think I'm in a space where I'm just sort of seeing every day as a little adventure, and a kind of being more detached from life at the moment, if that makes any sense.
Wow.
I got all hippie in Thailand.
What drugs are you on?
It's called Buddhism.
Nice, yeah.
You should have seen that Doi Sutep run, the one up to the temple that I did.
Epic.
It's 13K of like elevation. But again, not that I'm going to say it was easy, but certainly it wasn't hellish. Do you know, it was fine.
And you were locked in.
Mental. The fact that I could do that, move my body through that was mental. And that made me feel quite confident for Paris. Because I was like, oh, that was really tough, but I did it. And Paris is flat, right? Is it?
Yeah, it's pretty much. Pretty flat. I think there are a couple little bits of incline, but it's like, it's a city. Yeah. It won't be too bad. But yes, unbelievable. I saw it. It looks unreal.
Practicing for the cobblestones in Paris.
Yeah. I wasn't in Paris, but I did a marathon in Rome once, and I got hit by a moped person.
Shit.
And whenever I think of cobbles, I just think of like, I probably got cut up. But I remember just looking down and seeing all my blood on the cobbles. So that's...
During Rome marathon?
No, it was just me doing a marathon.
It was just
Rome.
You. Okay, I forget. Yeah. You are just out. But
it was on mile 4. And I remember thinking like...
Really?
But yeah, so the cobbles, I have a bit flashbacks to that.
PTSD.
Now. I ended up in a, like, not in a bin, but like by a bin on the floor, yeah.
Oh my God. Well, we'll have to do exposure therapy when we get to Paris.
Thanks.
We'll have to be like, Finn, this is a cobblestone. You're going to be fine.
Eat it.
But no, it'll be nice. I think it's a good crew of us going. So I think it'll be a really lovely trip. 3 medals. Me, Rihanna. Soph won't run it, obviously. Can you imagine?
Absolutely. However, she said that she will do one before she turns 30, and that's in September. So she hasn't got long.
A marathon?
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to be hilarious. Yeah. I'll definitely be there for that.
Yeah,
the other thing I wanted to ask you, we've gone all very casual, but it's fine. The Thames Ultra Challenge. Will you do 100 with me?
Yeah, this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
May? Do it double. So as always, guys, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to end on a poem that the lovely Finlay has written down.
I wrote it down.
Handwritten. How gorgeous is that? So we'll end with that. And take it away.
Yeah, so this poem, actually, I know the first 4 lines off by heart, but there's a load more to it that I don't know. So I've written it down. But it's by Ziggy Alberts, who's one of my favourite artists. If you don't know Ziggy Alberts, check him out. But he's an old soul as well. And it goes like this. When you set out in pursuit of your dreams, know that you become responsible, not just for the dreams of yourself, but also for the dreams of others. Because we all have dreams, and some people never set foot in their direction. And so you adopt the responsibility of the dreamer. And by pursuing yours, you light a torch. And remember this when you feel a heavy burden. Of course it's heavy when so few people are carrying out their dreams. But someone may stop and see your light, feel the warmth, and take to the kindle. And suddenly, they're flammable. And your role in this, my friend, is of utmost importance, because people are rarely encouraged in any way, shape, or form to pursue a life worth dreaming for. Yet it is the pursuit of our dreams and the previously unimagined that keeps both hope and the human spirit alight.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Wonderful. You'll have to send me that one.
It's cool.
A good one. It's a very good one.
It resonated with me so much, especially when I started doing all this running stuff, because when I looked around, I didn't feel like there wasn't much support. Everyone was so nice, but there weren't many people riding the same way, the wave of just wanting something else out of life. And I think that when I started to do it, I'd go home to where I lived and people would be like, oh, I saw what you did, man. And because of that, I lost 4 stone. I'm like...
Dude, it's a ripple.
Ripple
effect. It really is a ripple. And I think about this so much. I do think about like how maybe someone did a 5K and then their kids saw them and then that made them more active, or they went to school and then they did that, and then through generations and around the world. And it's, you've just got to keep doing the positive thing.
And it does feel like a heavy burden sometimes. And that's, I mean, I can't imagine what it's like for you, but I have genuinely like cried at the thought of like these people that what they say they've done off the back of something that you share. And I think, you have to keep going, man.
I'm in tears, like, because I'm such a sensitive person, and like, I do quite well at hiding it, but I am very sensitive. Maybe I don't hide it at all. I'm incredibly cringe online. But yeah, like I, you know, you get DMs just saying, you know, because of you, I opened the front door, I went for a run, or because of you, I set a boundary, because of you, I went to the gym, because of you, I looked at my relationship with alcohol, looked at my relationship with my boyfriend, whatever. And it's just like, I sometimes have to just detach myself from it because I will just be sobbing 24 hours a day.
I imagine and that is unbelievable. And it's insane that one person can make that kind of change in someone else. But actually, it's really sad that that's where we're at.
Lack of encouragement.
And that's another conversation for another time. But it is incredible.
People need so little encouragement to feel like, and I think this is what this podcast has struck on, is that, because in my mind this is quite a boring, it is quite boring, no, because it is just
thanks
me and it is just my thoughts of the week for an hour, but I think it's just a gentle encouragement that people lack so much in their personal lives, and we're looking so much for external, you know, sort of places to get that kind of like gentle push towards, hey kid, actually you can do this. And
for sure.
Well, I'm very pleased to be that person, and you are that person too.
Well, obviously I do a lot of work with the runners at 444 Coaching, which obviously Cassia heads up, and obviously so many of them, if ever I say anything to them, the answers they give back would be in relation to the podcast, and it's so cool they tune in, and most importantly, like, you know, bring themselves and listen.
Yes.
Because I know, you know, whenever I go on podcasts, there are a select few that listen, but you know, that's not the case for most people. They don't tune in, and it's cool that you have that community.
It's wonderful. I think people giving themselves that space every single week, whether it's on a walk or a run or cleaning, or, you know, they're productive while they listen, and yeah, it feels like I've got a big bunch of friends. So, and they love you. So thank you for coming on, Finn. I'm sure
we
should try and
pleasure.
Do this, you know, once a season, have the Finn episode.
I mean, I love it. I love just chatting.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I could do this for 3 hours, honestly. But yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Finn. Until next time, peace and love, blessings, all that good stuff. And I'll catch you next week.